Welcome to the Kelly Cardenas Podcast, where attitude is everything. On today's show, we actually had to do the intro, I believe it was three times, because I thought, oh, wow, you know, maybe this thing is unmuted. I was looking at it, but I love the fact that that happened today because this is exactly what happened when I met this individual. He actually stepped in on a shorter notice at a speaking engagement and absolutely killed it, but he was there and present in the moment. What I loved about him the most is that he was not, he didn't have so much ego where he wasn't able to laugh at himself and have fun with the crowd and be completely present with them. And when things didn't work as far as his audio or his video or the intro videos didn't go, then he didn't get mad like some people do. He just rolled with it, and he taught me so much in just being in the moment and being present with people. Also, too, what I loved about him is he was exactly the same on stage as when he came off stage. Him and I were walking through the hall, and he put his arm around me, and he was just like, you know, hey, man, is there anything that I could do for you? He was there to serve people where most people in his position are there to beat their chest and it to be all about them. And he struck me as a person who was constantly lifting other people up. And that's why I believe he's so wildly successful as a speaker. I believe he's going to be an author soon. We're going to work on that part of it. We're going to talk through that. You can find him at Haven Speaking on, at Haven Speaking on Instagram. You can find him, if you want to check out his family and see that he's truly who he says he is, then you can check him out on Haven's Family Adventures. You can check him out on matthavens.com. But please welcome to the podcast, the one and only, I think probably one of the best speakers in the game, Mr. Matt Havens.
Kelly, you are too kind. Thank you for that warm, inviting introduction. And quite frankly, like that, just that intro with the sound, and you know, I'm super jealous of your logo. like I don't have cool enough hair to do that, but you know, just excited to be on. It's good to see you again. It's been a couple months since we were at that event, and I'm just happy to be here. So thanks for having me.
Well, I think one of the things that comes across right off the bat, Matt, is the humility that you have. I mean, you're phenomenal at what you do. I mean, and the other thing that sucks for me is you got a really good jawline. Like I have to put my beard in. I have to cut it at a certain point because I ain't got no jaw and my face is really round. And then I see you, man, and looking like Ryan Gosling. And I don't want to hang out with you that much because then my wife will realize that men can be that handsome. But the thing that sticks,
I don't got his abs or his bank account.
Hey, so. Man, the bank account don't matter. You just got to be funny, right? If you could be funny, you're good. Like if you're broke and you're not funny, then you got problems.
You know, it is one of the things I've tried to pride myself on a little bit is the just willingness to have fun and joke and laugh at myself. I think it's one of the things that made my wife decide to be a little crazy and get married to me. So, you know, it works, right? It can work. And so I'm just trying to be living proof of that.
Well, that and you look like Prince Charming, man. That could help out. Your wife, you know, I know your wife is beautiful. You're a very handsome man. But the thing that I'm talking that struck me huge when we first met, man, was the humility part of it. Like, how do you stay in such a humble state when, I mean, you're at the top of your game? I mean, when you're one of the most sought after speakers, and when people have you, they have you back because you're so good at what you do. But how do you stay in that humble state as you move through these ranks?
Well, you know, I think one of the things I've always said about myself, and this is maybe a good trait, it's also maybe a bad trait, is I am always looking for ways to improve. And I feel like I'm never satisfied with my individual performance in whatever it may be, whether that's parenting, whether that's relationships, whether that's speaking, whether it was my previous corporate career. I used to always tell the bosses that I had, I said, I don't need you to tell me anything that I do well. I need you to tell me where I made a mistake, because that's just kind of how my brain works in a way, is like, I think, oh, I could be better. Oh, I could work a little bit harder here. Oh, I could have said that differently. So I constantly feel like I'm in this state where mentally I'm beating myself up, and I'm like, I always tell my wife too, it's like, I'm very competitive, but I'm not competitive with other people. I'm competitive with me and what I think my potential could be in whatever the given situation. So I think that probably helps me, is when you don't ever allow yourself to ever like truly get to a point where you think you're, you know, the top dog, or you think you're, something special, then I think it kind of helps just ground you and always keep you pushing forward and moving forward and looking for that next thing. So trust me, there's times it gets me in trouble. There's times when you do need to just sit back and rest and relax and take ownership of what you have accomplished. And I probably need to be better about that at times, but I think that may be one of the things that helps me stay humble, because I've always got more I can do. I've always got more I can give.
When does that hurt you, man?
I think sometimes that recently I feel like,
tell me something that when you said like, I got to do more. And it hurts you. Like, you know, cause we go through these things as entrepreneurs, as being out there, as being speakers, you know what I'm saying? Like, when has it injured you?
I don't know that it's injured me necessarily. That'd be like telling, you know, Kobe Bryant, hey, you shouldn't practice a lot. You know, it's like, no, of course you can always keep pushing. You can always keep getting better. So I don't know that it's ever like hurt me, but I do think sometimes the way that I think internally about myself or what I want to accomplish, or if I'm being hard on myself, I do have to be careful not to necessarily have the same expectations for everybody else around me. And so I'll give an example where I think sometimes it does get me in trouble is I feel like I hold my children, my 8-year-old daughters, to sometimes too high of a standard. Because I know what they're capable of. And I think, you know, a good parent, right? You want to drive and push your kids. And we're not like some of the crazy parents who, you know, have their kids in 8th grade travel softball and doing all that type of stuff. We're not like that. But there's times I have to just recognize that, like, you're a kid. And you're 8 and you're going through some things, and you know, yes, you can be better, but man, stop, like, let them be kids and let them work through that. So that's the only closest example I can think where maybe it hurts you. I do think at times it's probably a good quality, but I have to be careful that I just make sure that I keep that for myself and don't always expect it from everybody else.
Where do you think it came from? I mean, you know, was this something that, you know, were your parents hard charging and were they pushing you hard? You know, was there any comparisons to you, you know, in your life? I mean, I've just watched these things and I was very sheltered with it because, you know, my brother was really good at everything and he's good at everything he does, but my parents are always really encouraged me never to compare that part of it. But like, talk to us about young Matt.
Yeah, I think that's where I was going to say is probably just being the youngest of 3 brothers. You know, I obviously looked up to them and everything they do. And, you know, my oldest brother is 5 years my senior, and he's, you know, you called me an accomplished speaker, and I appreciate that. But my brother is at a much better, higher level than me. And there's so many other amazing, great speakers that I strive to be like one day. So I've always looked up to him, and I've always... maybe that's been a little bit of the challenge of pushing. My middle brother was really good at sports, you know, kind of growing up, and I played the same sports that he did. So I never quite could get to his level. In fact, Kelly, 2 years ago, we had the brother versus brother basketball challenge that went down back in our hometown. We raised money for various charities and doing it, you know, people were donating for him to say, could he win in a game of 1-on-1? People were donating to me. I don't like to admit this, but he did get more money on his side. And he ended up winning on a last second shot. It was the, a 1-point loss. And the thing, you know, you talk about beating myself up. I'm still angry because I was up 2 points and I missed 2 wide open shots. I got him tired. You know, he wasn't moving laterally well. And I miss both of them. Then he comes back, rebounds, gets a couple quick buckets, and I lose. So, you know, it's just, I think in that regard, it's like the family, sibling, you know, your upbringing, where maybe that's driven some of it. But, you know, I'm still just trying to look up to them and be as good as or better than them so that I can hang it over their head, you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas.
So talk to us about your parents, man. I mean, did you have hard charging parents? Did you have, you know, where were your parents at, and what were some of the lessons that they taught you when you were growing up?
Yeah. I always say I've got 4 amazing parents, because my parents were divorced when I was pretty young. I jokingly say I was the reason for it. You know, if my mom's listening to this or my dad's listening to this. I'm just joking. Okay. Chill. I'm 38 now. I can deal with it. But
how old, Matt, were you when they got divorced?
I'll be honest. I don't even know. I think I was like one or two.
Okay. So you didn't even,
I was pretty young.
You didn't even know.
I don't really remember a time without, you know, my parents living in separate homes. And, but my dad was, I credit my dad. He was always around, all through high school. He never lived more than 2 hours away. And he would sometimes get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to drive and meet us for breakfast before we took us to school. So he was always, around and available. My mom was kind of like your stereotypical quote unquote single mother. You know, she was working multiple jobs. She was a teacher by trade. And then in the summers, you know, she would pick up another job. She eventually left teaching to go full time with one of the jobs that she had in the summer with a large insurance company, and then had a long career with them. But they were just, you know, they were always present. They were great. And, you know, it's certainly divorced parents can lead to certain things, I think, in some situations. I feel very blessed and lucky that we had a good situation. We had two loving parents that then ultimately both remarried. And now I've got two step parents that are like family and love and treat my parents well. So, you know, I'm just as happy as can be to have everybody like that in my life.
This episode is brought to you by one of my favorite companies in the entire world, the Mina Group. As one of the top culinary experiences in the world, celebrity chef Michael Mina and his team are dedicated to giving you what you never knew you always wanted. With 30 locations throughout the world, this company is focused on the one thing that truly matters, their people, and that is why they are your world of wow. Change your life by going to michaelmina.net. So talk to us about something like single moms. Shout out to single moms out there. Like single moms. I mean, that's the reason why most people don't talk about single dads. I mean, single dads, we got some love for you. But single moms, you guys are superheroes. Tell us about some experiences that you saw that you learned more from what you saw with your mom than maybe some of the lessons she was telling you.
You know, I think it's just like I don't think those lessons, I realized them as they were happening. Okay. I'll give you one, that hit. And my mom likes to tell the story because, you know, now that I have young children, I realize I'm trying to instill things in them and I'm trying to help them that I hope one day it will sink in. I hope one day they'll come back and be like, I remember when you did this and it taught me this and it was so great, right? That we're going to have that moment. I don't know if it'll happen, but for my mom, what happened was in college, I was living with three other guys. I think this was maybe my junior year of college. And we had this goofy little thing on Sundays. We called it family dinner. And one person was in charge of making dinner for everybody in the house on Sundays. And then it rotated, right? So the first Sunday that I have to make dinner for my three roommates and I'm trying to like time everything up right. You know, you want to finish the steaks at the time when the sides are done. And, you know, I am the train wreck in this kitchen trying to figure out how to do this. And I called my mom, not thinking anything of it. And I just said, hey, mom, I'm out here making dinner for my roommates. And I can't figure this stuff out. I am the side's already done. The steak's still got 20 minutes to go. Like what's going on here? Don't cook your steak for 20 minutes. But anyways. And so I called her and I was like, mom, you did this every night. You did this every night for three very, very hungry boys. Thank you. That is really tough. And she was quiet. And I was like, mom, you still there? And then she's like, yeah, I'm here. You know, cause she was just like, it was that moment of, we always had family dinner every night. My friends used to make fun of me at, you know, eighth grade, if I had to go home at six to go eat dinner with my family. But it was like, that was the only time that she could make sure she had her three boys at the table and, you know, talking, even though we probably weren't, you know, but at the table together. And so I think it was just that moment for her that I realized later in life, like, wow, you worked hard, you provided for the family, but you also made sure that you took care of us and you made time for us. And I didn't realize it in the moment how important that was, but it's certainly a lesson I've learned. And now something that, you know, we do in our house is we make sure we have dinner and we sit together and we talk. And they're eight now, so it's really easy to do that. I'm sure it'll be more difficult when they're 14 and 15, but you know, right now, that's just one of the practices we're trying to put in.
What are some of the advantages of having a divorced family?
I mean, I think one parent gets to be the fun parent at times, you can play a little yin and yang. So, if we couldn't get it from mom, maybe we could get it from dad or vice versa. But it's like I had divorced parents, but I feel like I didn't.
Okay.
Just because they were so good about focusing on us to take care of us first and put their differences aside. You know, as I've gotten older, like I've realized, you know, there's probably good reasons that they got divorced. And I'm very happy that they both found somebody else that they're probably life partners with for the rest of their life. But in that moment, it wasn't the awkwardness that I think, you know, will sometimes naturally happen in a situation of divorce. My parents never did that. They were cordial. They kept us first. They focused on our well-being, and if there was any tension between them, they certainly hit it well enough that, you know, an 18-year-old kid couldn't figure it out.
So you don't think that an advantage of being divorced is getting two birthday presents? Because I have a bone to pick, right? Like some people, yeah, I grew up, fair. My parents stayed together. They stayed together, and I'm not saying it was perfect. They were together. They stayed married the whole nine. I had divorced friends, and, you know, they had, you know, challenges. They were like, man, I miss my dad. But then I was like, hey, Joker, like I got my mom and dad, but I ain't getting two Christmas presents. I ain't getting two birthday presents. Talk to us about the advantage of that and the advantage of being the baby in the family.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the bigger advantage, right? The bigger advantage of being the third child, like you get away with everything.
What'd you get away with, Matt?
You know, it was just like everything happens earlier, right? So like if my brother's curfew was 11 o'clock, you know, freshman year of high school, I got the 11 o'clock curfew in seventh grade, you know, and, it, you know, this was kind of before cell phones, or right as cell phones were starting to kind of come, you know, we had like the 35 pound car console phone, you know, that you bolted to the armrest. Like I got that way earlier than my brothers did, you know, and phone call only cost $18 for a minute, but you know, it was really cool and you felt cool. So I think you just get like the benefits of your parents have been through something and they've figured it out, and they know that they're either just exhausted from working with these other two kids, or they're like, okay, maybe they won't die every second if I'm not watching them. And so, you know, I know that's what my wife and I say. We had twins, so we had them right two at the same time. We weren't expecting that sort of thing, but we knew we don't have any more children. We knew that if we did, like, man, this was going to feel like cake. You're not going to worry about it as much. So I will say the only other thing I'd say advantage of having divorced parents is because we primarily live with my mom. Like I said, when we went to my dad's house, I think my dad would, and I think he would agree with this, he would try to make it an enjoyable, fun place to be. Because if he only got us for 2 days on a weekend or, you know, something like that, you know, so it was my dad's house where he lived out in the country. We had some go-karts. There was one couple years we all got really into baseball. So he, you know, built a batting cage so that we could, so it became like well, this is gonna be fun. Let's go there. And I don't know with married parents that you could maybe convince the spouses to be like, let's put a batting cage and get go-karts, you know? So it's just, maybe that's another good advantage of it.
So what if anything did your dad let you do that your mom still doesn't know to this day?
Oh, I don't know. She probably knows everything. I think the big one was, and it got him in trouble as well, is we used to ride motorcycles a lot at way pretty early age. And then unfortunately, and he's fine, but my oldest brother had a motorcycle accident at 15 that we were honestly looking back. We're lucky that he is still around. It was a pretty bad accident. And he should not have been driving that, obviously, at 15. So we got away with that, definitely. And we did not ride motorcycles after that. But I did scare my mom for a little bit in college. I bought one for had a motorcycle for two or three years. And I think I scared the living heck out of her for those 2 years. But luckily, never laid it down.
So, Matt, with three boys, right? You guys are protective of your mom. I'm assuming this, right? Mm-hmm. So, as you're growing up, you're protective of your mom. She's a single mom. What age does your mom start dating?
So my mom, it wasn't until after I had left for college that I think my mom took time for herself.
Okay.
And we've talked with her about that. And maybe that's not the whole reason, but my mom knew, I think, from age 10 that she wanted to be a mom. She'll tell you that. And even in her work that she did a lot of work with youth and youth education. So it's just always been a passion for her. So I think when we were growing up, I don't know that my mom had any desire to spend any other time focusing on herself or finding hobbies or finding, you know, other people. So once I was out of the house, and I think, you know, it was quieter, then I think she had the time to do that and met a very good man, and they're happily married still to this day. So,
but as a boy, right? As a boy, and when I say a boy, you're a man, but as a boy and as your three boys, when your brothers come together, were you guys just like, yay, mom met a dude? Or were you guys like, hey, that's my mom. You need to back up, bro. Like, we're going to have some counseling with you. Did the three brothers come together? And did you guys conversation?
I think we came together and we were pretty quickly like very happy. Because again, happening when we're older like that, we're all in our probably 20s, you know, 20-ish for me, mid 20s for my oldest brother. I think we were just happy. We were happy for her, and
you didn't have anything in you.
I also think like
you and your bros didn't have that talk. Like, hey, if this dude, you know, acts up, we're gonna have to take him to the woodshed.
No. See, that's what I'm gonna do with my daughters, though.
Okay, that's all. Yeah,
you've seen like Bad Boys, right? The movie. Yeah, like I'm gonna get my friends over. You know, who's Reggie? Like, that's what we're gonna be doing. But no, with my mom, you know, she's a strong individual, and we always knew she could take care of herself. So I don't think we were too worried about it.
So talk to us about what has marriage taught you? I mean, you grew up with, like you said, you grew up with normal four parents, right? And so you're in this realm. Now you're a happily married man. You got two beautiful daughters, right?
Yep. And yeah, twin daughters that are in second grade.
Twin daughters, 8 years old. Please pray for him.
Please.
What did you learn about marriage, and what have you learned about yourself through the marriage?
The thing I think I've learned about marriage is, of course, you know, everybody says, right? I actually don't like when people say marriage is tough. And I'm saying that a little tongue in cheek. Okay. But if you find the person that you're supposed to be with, I don't think it's that tough. And so marriage for me and my wife, she's absolutely my best friend. So it's not tough. That does not mean that we don't have disagreements. That doesn't mean that, you know, there are some tough moments, but, if you keep that person first, and spend time and want to communicate with them. And that is a big thing. Like, we have to communicate a lot, about our feelings, our emotions, whatever it may be. Right. But if you do that, I don't think it's that hard. And so, I think that's one of the things that I've learned is you have to put in that time and effort. And my wife and I, we met when we were 20. We went to different schools, and then right after school, we kind of flip-flop cities because she was starting a dental hygiene program after college, and I started a corporate career. And so for the first 5 years we were together, we were long distance. And I do think that certainly taught us how important communication is. So have you seen the Seinfeld episode? I think it's the Festivus episodes where they talk about airing of the grievances.
Of course.
Right?
Yes.
So we did this so often. This was actually a part of our wedding ceremony. We had a airing of the grievances because one of the things that we learned, I know I love your face. one of the things we learned 5 years of dating long distance is, you know, like those little things that upset you about something that somebody said, or, you know, maybe they didn't respond back to you quickly or something like that. Right. And if it's a relationship you're having, those little things can add up. And they can blow up into bigger things. And so when we were doing these long distance dating, we never, if we ever were hanging up the phone and let's say she was going to go out with her friends and I was going to go out with my friends, we would just kind of jokingly say, all right, any grievances to air, you know, before we go out, I don't want you calling at 1 a.m. saying you're upset about something I said yesterday. Right. And we would do it. It was always kind of a joke, but sometimes they were serious. Sometimes it was like, yes, what you said last week really bothered me. I've still been thinking about it. Okay, let's talk about it. And maybe those, maybe the airing grievances would be 5 minutes. Maybe it would be like 35 minutes, but we would get to the point where it's like, all right, love you. And you know, whatever was said, didn't mean it that way. And now we understand each other and now we can move on. And so I think that just taught us how important it is to communicate with each other, everything, all of our feelings together. And when we do that, I, again, think that helps make marriage a little bit easier and not feel like a chore. So yeah, we're 18 years into our relationship together, 12 years of marriage, and you know, still love her, if not more than the day we got married. So
this episode is proudly brought to you by SamaritansFeet.org. I met Manny Ahomey probably about 4 or 5 months ago, and this man had such an impression on me. He told me that when he was 9 years old, he had lived up until that point without shoes, and he won a contest, got shoes, and it changed his whole entire life, inspired him to play basketball, inspired him to get a Division I scholarship playing basketball and succeed at a high level in his life. He then got to a point where he was so successful, but he was looking for purpose in his life. Samaritan's Feet serves and inspires hope in children by providing shoes as a foundation to a spiritual and healthy life, resulting in the advancement of education and economic opportunities. When I asked Manny, why shoes? Why did you think that this would be so huge? And he said, to provide a tangible foundation of hope and the opportunity for a better life, to prompt children to focus in school and families not to worry, and to protect feet and decrease the possibility of getting a foot-borne disease. Since 2003, Samaritan's Feet and its partners have distributed over 8 million pairs of shoes in 108 countries and over 440 U.S. cities. And that's why I'm so proud that SamaritansFeet.org is one of the main sponsors of the Kelly Cardenas podcast, because making this world a better place is our rent for living on this planet. Tell me about this airing of grievances at your wedding, though. Like, okay, help me with this, because you went, and I'm going to give you a Seinfeld reference on this. You yada yada'd us really quick, because
I did.
You were like airing of grievances at my wedding, and then you went out. No, let's stop there. Talk to us about the specific of it, and I want to know what you said. Did you say some real stuff? Did you say some gangster stuff?
It was PG probably, but so my oldest brother Jeff, who's also a speaker, and you know, we knew could talk like that. He was our officiant for the wedding, and we had. He asked us for one wedding planning related airing of the grievances. So, you know, when you're planning a wedding, you know, and we had too big of a wedding, right? We spent too much money on it and time planning this thing, right? Whatever, we should have just eloped. But you plan a wedding for a year, of course, you're going to have little arguments about stuff, you know, planning the wedding. So we kept it about that. I believe Megan was upset because of how I addressed the wedding invitations. I didn't properly sign if it was for a family, like a family of people. I would sign it like Kelly Cardenas and kids. And she said that that's wrong. And she hated every invitation that I addressed like that. I didn't like the registering for gifts process because she wouldn't let me shoot the price gun at the stuff I really wanted. Instead, we had to like shoot it at decorative vases and stuff like that. So that was our airing of grievances. And then Jeff, as the officiant, you know, he made us walk through then, you know, other person saying, I am sorry, I was wrong, I never should have done it. If I ever bring this up again in a future argument, it'll be my fault. And that was it, you know, airing of the grievances. Now we can get married with a clear conscience.
Dude, you guys are gangster. I want to meet your wife too. Your wife is gangster. I mean, this is that part. It blows my mind. Like, talk to us too about. I mean, you alluded to it a little bit about you had a huge wedding. You should have just eloped. What my wife and I were talking about, because she does a bunch of weddings, is that most people spend so much time, energy, and money on their wedding, and they don't spend it on the foundation of their relationship. And if they would spend sure. half the amount of money on like them being together as they did on their wedding, then we wouldn't end in divorce as much as we do in this mm-hmm. country. Can you talk to us about that a little bit?
Well, I mean, Kelly, my wife and I joke. So every year for our anniversary, we do sit down, we watch the video of our wedding. And now it's been fun to like have the kids do that with us too. But I don't really remember that day. Like, it was so stressful. You're running around, you know, I think we had maybe close to 300 people there. And you're wanting to say hi to everybody that was kind enough to spend their night with you. Right. So you're at the reception, you're running around shaking hands. I think we were late to the reception because we were taking pictures and it took too long. So it's just, you're running around. And honestly, we always say the best moment, the kind of the best moment of the day, certainly the ceremony, like we remember that. But the best part was after the reception was over, you know, it's midnight, it's 1 o'clock. And we were leaving the next morning for our honeymoon pretty early. So we didn't go to bed. We stayed up. Because we had to leave for the airport around 4 a.m. So we had this time from like 1 a.m. to 4 a.m. And it was just us. The wedding party and reception had kind of moved to the hotel lobby, and we got to go and spend some time with, you know, some more friends there and just talk. But it was 3 hours where it's like, all right, it's just us. Like, wow, this, you know, and so like, it's moments like that where, like I say, she's my number one and I want to spend as much time with her as I can. And so even on your wedding day, it's like, plan for that, man, plan for that time. You can just chill. So we're still, I think right now, one of the things that helps us continue in our marriage is we do always make time for each other still to this day. And you know, with young kids, it is very hard to get away. And luckily again, we have great family support system. But we will leave our kids and her and I will go on a, you know, 2-night vacation. Or if I'm speaking, last month I was speaking out in Scottsdale, Arizona. She came with me. Kids stayed here with grandma and grandpa. She came with me and we had 2 nights that was just us. So I think that's important to build in the time and be intentional about it. And it's just something we try to do and we'll continue to try to do.
Matt, what's the biggest, funniest mistake you've made in your marriage?
Oh, man. How much time we got here, Kelly?
We got all day, baby. You ain't getting out of this one.
It's a good question. I think, what's the biggest mistake or funniest?
And everyone tells me this, like, especially a positive guy like you is like, I don't make mistakes. Everything was lesson. No. I'm saying we're human. We make some mistakes. We make some missteps. Like you know, we go one way and we're like, yo, this is what we're going to do. And then, you know, either our wife tells us, no, we shouldn't do it. And then she sits back and she never tells you. My wife never tells me, I told you so. But she just looks at me like,
yeah,
now what, dummy? You know what I'm saying? So talk to us about something specific that you messed up on. Cause everybody's seeing you right now, you know, everybody that's watching you is like, man, I mean, he's talking about his loving his kids. He loves his wife. They spend time together. They communicate. What is this? A perfect marriage? I want to tell you, I mean, Matt, you're my friend, but I know you screw up in your marriage as a husband.
I screw up frequently.
Tell us.
Well, I mean, so I'm going to go back a little bit to like earlier when I was talking about sometime projecting myself and the way that I am onto somebody else. Right. Megan will constantly, and I don't have like a specific example cause it just happens all the time. If she's bringing up a situation to talk about that she wants to, you know, think through, or how should I act? My normal communication style when it comes to that is I try to think of the other person's perspective. I call it playing devil's advocate, right? Like so I talk like that. And so every time we get into a conversation about this, that, or the other, she's like, will you stop disagreeing with me? Will you stop playing devil's advocate and just like, think of how I could be thinking about this. And I'm like, no, but I'm not debating you. I'm not arguing with you, because it's just the way, like, it's just the way that my mind's thinking. So again, it comes back to like understanding communication. And then just, you know, I do think sometimes you have to be like crystal clear, with what you're doing. We joke, one of the biggest fights we have, and this is going to sound stupid. This is going to sound really dumb. One of the biggest fights we ever had was over a TV. 8-9 years ago, we lived in Bloomington, Illinois, and some friends and I, we were going to be driving to Nashville, kind of like a guy's weekend, and we were going to go to the Chicago Bears game playing the Tennessee Titans. And we had a TV down in our basement that wasn't really being used. It was up on our wall, but we were going to take this TV with us in the car as we drive to Nashville and go have a guys weekend. All of the wives, all our friends who were all going, their wives were all going to be at our house, and they were going to have like a women's night. And I think they were going to watch Magic Mike or something and drink up a lot of wine or whatever. So they go down to start this movie night. We're halfway on the road to Nashville, and I get a call from Megan. She's like, "Where's the TV?" I was like, "What do you mean, where's the TV? It's in the car." She's like, "Why are you taking the TV, our 50-inch TV, on your little guys' weekend in Nashville? Like, you tried to sneak that out from underneath me." And I was like, "No, I didn't. You were in the garage when I was packing this car. Like, what do you mean? I showed, like, you were literally there when my buddy was with me, and we put the TV in the car. You saw it. And there's another TV down for you guys to watch. Like, what do you, like, there's another TV right there. Just watch it on that." So she didn't talk to me the whole weekend. She didn't talk to me the whole weekend because she thought I was trying to be like sneaky. And because she knew if I had told her we were going to take a TV, that she would have had a problem with it. And then it wouldn't have happened. So we still, you know, obviously we got over it pretty quickly. After I came back to Nashville, she didn't talk to me for 3 days, but after that, you know, we talked it out. And now the last time we actually went to a football game, as we walked in, I just pointed at all the TVs that were in the parking lot. And I said, "Oh, look, there's another TV right there. Look, oh, look, they brought a TV too. Wow, that's crazy." And now we can laugh about it. But but in that situation, right, it's like, I guess you gotta communicate better. "Hey, sweetie, we are going to take this TV. Here it is. Stay in the car. You're going to have to watch your movie on the other TV that's there."
Thank you for listening to today's episode. I hope you're enjoying it. Now's the time to do some shameless promotion. This episode is brought to you by Squeeze Dried, a delicious, no-hassle way to get superfoods, vitamins, and nutrition. SqueezeDried.com. It's also brought to you by Cardenas Law Group, a high-level boutique law firm for all your personal injury needs. That's CardenasLawGroup.com. Thank you so much again for listening. Hopefully you're continuing to enjoy the episode.
So Matt, fill in the blank. If women only knew this, marriage would be so much simpler.
I don't know. I feel like I could get a lot of trouble.
You're going to get in tons of trouble, but you got to answer it. You said that nothing is off limits today. So
you're right.
If women, and let's say if my wife only knew X, marriage would be so much simpler.
She has learned this. So I'm going to tell you something that she has learned recently.
All right.
If you would just make me a sandwich without me asking, you will make me the happiest person in the world. Like, there's no closer way, I think, to a man's heart, but certainly to mine, of like somebody else making a lunch sandwich for me. I just absolutely love it. It just feels like such a kind gesture. I don't like making sandwiches, but I like to eat them. And so if I don't have to make it myself, oh my goodness, I will love you forever. And so I made that joke with her. And she makes the best sandwiches. She puts like the crispy chips on it so you can crunch it down. Oh, and it's like every time she does it, I'm just like, I love you more and more every day.
But she doesn't do it all the time, right? So she'll do it.
You know, she keeps it. If she did it every day, it'd probably become too common.
It would be. I'm not saying
like sandwiches if I ate them every day.
Well, I'm saying like you could do some gluten free or something, but I'm saying like, you know, I think what women do, and I know my wife does it. She knows that thing that I like to be able to do, and then, or that I would like, and then she's just like, "I'll give you a little bit of it. I'll let you have it. I'll give you a sandwich.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not going to give you the sandwich every day.
You know what I'm saying? You know, it keeps it mysterious.
I'm okay. Ask Megan. I mean, because I guess a sandwich every day, you would be spoiled.
Yeah, then it becomes an expectation. Then you don't get the sandwich. Like, hey, where's my sandwich?
Yes.
To me, it's still a surprise. It's a fun surprise. Oh, you thought of me. Thank you. I love you.
Marriage is easy as long as you make me a sandwich.
Just make me a sandwich. I'm a simple guy. I don't need a lot. I just need somebody to occasionally laugh at my jokes and put up with some of the crazy ideas that I have and occasionally make a sandwich.
What would you say that your wife, if she had the same question, this marriage would be so much easier if my husband just did X?
Just let her go to Target. You know, and I don't.
Do you not let her go to Target? You got that kind of control. You got that kind of control.
It's just so we always joke like if she is going to Target, I just say, hey, go have fun. I don't tell me how much you spent. I don't care. I know that this is your time. Just go. And she jokes around. She's like, you know what I would really love is if you came and walked the aisles with me someday. And I'm like, I can't. Because when I go to a store, I go there for a specific purpose to get a specific thing. You go to like look, and it takes a long time, and I would just be annoying to you. So
would you be willing to do it for the crispy chip sandwich?
Oh, of course, yeah.
So you would go down the aisles. You would go down the aisles. Now, would you do it reluctantly though, Matt? Because you look like in your eyes right now, like those of you listening, you can't see it, but those of you watching, you can see it in his face. He was like, I'll go. If you go like that, she is going to be like, why'd you come anyway? This doesn't mean anything. You should want to come. So
you sound like Megan right now.
Okay.
Yes. Would
you be willing to go and be joyous and just be present if she made you a crispy chip sandwich?
Yes. But Kelly, I think the point that you're also making is I shouldn't need a sandwich to go do it. You know what I mean? Like I should just.
No, you should. I'm saying stand your ground.
I should be present. Okay.
No,
Megan,
I'm saying
stand. We're going to Target.
Yes, man. Okay, you got. Sometimes we got to stand our ground as men.
We're gonna make this happen. Okay.
We got to do it.
I got to be better.
I want to have one of these sandwiches because if that sandwich will make your marriage better, dude, I got to have that sandwich. I don't know what's on it, but.
Kelly, I told you, man, I'm simple. It's not even a special. There's not a whole lot on it. I just need some bread, some cheese, some type of a lunch meat, maybe a little bit of a dressing of some sort.
You go Miracle Whip, you go mayo.
I'll go with whatever we have. But if I'm choosing, I'd probably go Miracle Whip.
Okay. Miracle Whip is weird. Miracle Whip is weird. It's weird because I don't know what it is.
I don't know what half the things
are. It's a miracle. But yes. I don't know what it is. We never got to have it. As kids, because we couldn't afford it, but I just always wonder what that was. And my buddy, whose name is Will, he would eat Miracle Whip sandwiches.
Yep.
That's weird.
I also, growing up, ate definitely a lot of Miracle Whip and mayonnaise sandwiches just because it was like the amount of food, you know, three boys go through and you know, their teens is amazing. My mom said she used to have to go to the grocery store sometimes twice a day because we would just eat everything. And I'm starting to see that now with my 8-year-old daughters, like, wow, they can put down some food.
So Matt, with your wife making you a sandwich, right? I want to meet her too. Cause when you get in a fight, do you ever just be like, just make me a sandwich? You know, do you do that? I try it with a chicken pot pie.
I've never uttered those words.
You should in a fight.
Will next time.
You need to just calm it down. Like stay calm. And when she's like firing on you, just be like, look, go get me a sandwich, Megan. Like everything will be fine.
All I need is a sandwich. But I also think if I yelled that in the middle of a fight, I probably would be sleeping in the car.
Yep. You know? That's true. That's true.
If you tell somebody to go make you a sandwich, you know, that could not end well.
Another pause for station identification and shameless promotion. This episode is also brought to you by Finley Cars of Las Vegas. I tell you, next level in the car buying experience. And not only that, but the life of your car, the service that you're going to experience is incredible. It's Finley Volvo Cars
LV.com. And also brought to you by Bling Shine Serum, the only product on the market that will add weightless moisture, strength, and shine, and the only product that has the endorsement of my mama. When I showed her all the features and benefits, she smelled it, and she said, "This is the greatest product that you've ever done." And I thought, "Mom, do you not look at the features and benefits?" She said, "No, if it smells like that, it must work." And I tell you, every single woman needs a little bit of bling in their life, and this can be purchased at KellyCardenasSalon.com. Yeah. So I know too, I think one of the coolest things with you is your transition from the corporate world, and then you went after something that was, I believe, for me, I've got to see you speak, and I know that's your purpose. And I know that all the desires that you have as a speaker, and even when you're kind of a little self-deprecating, being like, yo, I'm not, you know, my brother's like on this level and I'm not, and, but you're on that level, Matt. Like, I've seen you, I've experienced you, I've experienced some of the greatest speakers in the world, and to see you and to see you in front. And if you're a company out there, you need to have this guy with you. When you made that transition, though, because you went from like, I got me a jobby job, right? And I got me some bennies. I got all that stuff. And then, hey, wife, I want to do this one thing that, you know, is like, it's a shot. Like, you got to take your shot on it. Talk to us about how much it meant that your wife was actually supportive and having that foundation in you going after what you're passionate about and what you love. Because I think there's so many entrepreneurs out there that are like, yo, I'm growing as a person or as a business owner, and my wife just doesn't really get it. So I need to maybe think about changing my relationship. I'm like, no, dummy. You need to go shore up your relationship, and then she'll support you in all the dreams that you do. But if you leave her now, I can guarantee you that the other thing's going to fail too. Talk to us about that a little bit, Matt.
Yeah. Well, so I mean, I guess it'll, in a way, it goes back to our wedding. You know, we wrote our own vows for each other. And one of the things that Megan wrote for me is she goes, "I promise to support you in all of your dreams." And we've talked about that as we've, you know, matured and grown together and stuff. She is so supportive of the ideas that I have. And it's not like I have millions of ideas every day, but like when it's a serious idea and I really want to explore something, she is always right there to be like, yeah, let's try it. Or what about this? Or, you know, how can we make that idea better? So when it came to my corporate career, I just, having kids really changed how I viewed work. And, you know, I was, before kids, when I had a corporate career, I never understood why people went home at 5 o'clock when there was still more stuff to be done. You know, if we had a presentation that we need to get ready for, I was shocked. I just didn't understand it. It's like, what are you doing? Like, we got work to do, and let's get it done. Like, I'll stay late. I'll work on the weekends. It doesn't matter. And then I had kids, and I was like, oh, okay. Maybe that's why people want to go home at 5. Like, maybe they want to, you know, be with their family and do this type of stuff. And, so it changed kind of how I viewed then work, because as somebody kind of quote unquote moving up the corporate ladder, I still had a little bit of that mentality. And there was a moment I came home from work one day. Our daughters were maybe one, probably not even one yet. And I came home at like, let's say 5:30, walked in the door. And the first thing I do is on the kitchen table, I open up my laptop, and I actually kind of jumped right back into some emails that I had just left at the office 15 minutes prior. And, Megan was carrying one of our daughters at the time, and without meaning anything, she wasn't angry. She was just having a conversation with me. She goes, "Hey, the girls go down to sleep at 7. You only got like an hour until they go to bed. Can it wait?" And I was like, "Yeah, of course." And I shut the laptop and, you know, went and spent time with the kids and had dinner and all that. But it was the reflection of that moment that I had, like, wow, you're right. Why am I grinding this thing out, trying to move up this corporate ladder, which is going to then maybe even potentially take me farther away from my family and my purpose and the thing that like I really draw energy from. It's not saying that, you know, people who are in senior executive positions aren't family people. I'm not trying to suggest that, but just for me, like, I realized like this isn't going to work. This isn't going to work for me. So how do I find something that when I'm home, I can be home. And when I'm working, I can be out working. And that was one of the things with speaking that I realized is when I go and I travel, and I do have to travel a lot, and it does take me away from home. But when I'm back home, I'm home. I'm here. I'm going to, after our podcast, I'm going to go pick up our kids from school. And I'm really excited to do that. But when I had a corporate career, I would still have to travel for work. And then I'd get home on a Thursday, and guess where I was Friday morning? Back in the office, because that was the work schedule. And so just like over the time, that kind of like started wearing on me a little bit. And I did kind of start speaking when I had this corporate career. I was going off and doing that just a couple times a year. But I realized that with that, whereas in a corporate environment, I have influence and direction over my team, and I can help them grow. And I really enjoyed that part of it. Not saying in any ways I was the best leader in the world, but like I could try to make the people I worked closely with better and challenge them and push them. That is a really small circle of influence. When I go out and I speak, I am talking to people from various companies, different industries, all going through different things. And in one hour speech, I might be able to influence 80 companies. I might be able to influence 200 people. And man, if I do that, if I build that out and I continue to do that, well, now I feel like maybe I'm making a bigger difference. And so, so we kind of started talking about it again as a couple, and said, I think I want to go do this full time. Are you okay with that? And she was like, yeah, I'll support you in whatever your dreams are. So we kind of put a plan in place. And then I think it was, I'm losing track of time now and everything, but I think it was 2019. I left that job to go do speaking full time. And it's been a fun run since.
Talk to us about the non-romantic side of it, because especially today, we talk about this quite a bit, is the, when friends of mine that are entrepreneurs, or, you know, I consider you an entrepreneur stepping out and doing your own thing, the romantic side, the shiny side, oh man, I don't need to work for the man. I need to do my own thing. And it's like, mm-hmm. But most of the time people don't talk about the nasty, the dirty that we take on as entrepreneurs when that happens. Like, I remember there was a time where I was 2 years in, I think it was 2 years into my marriage. And we had a business in Chicago, and we had one in Vegas. And I was flying back and forth to both of them. I was working in both of them. I was, I was working, and then I was speaking, and then I was working in the other one, and I was going back and forth, and I was doing all these things. And I remember getting to the point, I got, went up top, and I logged into my bank account for the first time, because my accountant had always handled it. And I logged into my bank account, and I was like, I looked at it, and I about fell off my chair, because everything was zeroed out. Everything, Matt, credit lines, all done. Credit cards maxed out. Bank account, business, personal, savings, zero. Nothing. And I looked at my wife and I was like, I am working harder than I ever have in my entire life, and everything zero. And she put her hand on my back and she rubbed my back and she said, baby, it's going to be okay. Talk to us about some of the nasty, the dirty that you have gone through, because it hasn't all just been like, hey, we made a plan and then everything worked out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, I mean, the biggest thing obviously recently was the impacts of COVID to speaking with, you know, my COVID. Primary business.
What happened then? I'm just joking.
There was this little thing just kind of went around.
Okay. Yeah. World shut down. But,
you know, I left my corporate career in 2019.
What month?
April, I think is when it was. Yeah. April of 2019. And you know, it was a good job.
Yeah.
Every 2 weeks they put money in my bank account, and that was cool. And then I left knowing that, okay, one of the reasons I left was the speaking career had started to surpass my ability probably to do my job well, okay. my corporate job well. So, you know, I can project out for the rest of 2019. Hey, I went from kind of having two jobs to I'm just going to have one. Like, sure, I'm going to lose a little bit of money this first year, but if the trajectory is looking good, everything's great, right? And then 2020 comes, and over here to my right, what used to be over here, nothing's in this house anymore because we're moving out of it. But I had like my vision board or whatever you want to call it, right? And I have like what I want to accomplish in 2020. And it's February and I am like on track to exceed the what I felt like were very lofty goals for me in 2020. So I'm happy, feeling good. And then I get that first email that says one of your events is postponed. And I was like, what? And I even remember, because I still have the email. I have the email going back and forth, like my agent, again, my brother's in the business. We're all kind of talking like, so wait, what do we do? Like somebody postponed an event. And the emails are hilarious because I'm just like, well, it's kind of on them to cancel it. Like they canceled it. Like what? It's not, this thing isn't a big deal. Like, why can't I still just go speak there? Like not a big deal. Right. And then obviously we start to realize like, okay, this thing is going to be a little bit bigger and have some bigger impacts. And like, get in the next week, they all come. So in that 1 week, I went from having to absolutely my biggest year of speaking and, exceeding my lofty goals to nothing on the calendar. Zero. Everything is postponed. Luckily, not a whole lot of cancellations, but everything is pushed off until 2021. Mm. And it's just like, what do we do? Like how do we pay for the bills that are still going to keep coming in? Man, I wish I had that corporate job where they still keep sending you money every 2 weeks. So I mean, that was certainly like in a way you can call it like a dark, crazy time at first about like, I think being a business owner, but so many people obviously experienced that as well too. And in a lot of cases, people had it, way worse than I did. Like, luckily, in a way I had kind of planned for it. Like I had saved up as much money as I could my corporate job before I left. So, I wasn't planning to burn through all that cash, but I burned through pretty much all the savings that we had, at the time. But you kind of make it work, right? You just, the thing that COVID taught me, and I say this sometimes, is like, it's one of the rare human experiences that we've had recently where every single one of us is impacted by it. Like we all experienced something together, but we experienced it in different ways. So there's not many things that we can say that. Like you had a certain upbringing. I may not have experienced your upbringing, but we all went through COVID together. And if we pause and recognize that we all went through this thing together, but we experienced it in different ways, then I start asking the question like, well, okay, how could I experience it in the most positive way possible? And very quickly, one of those things that kind of hit me is like, all right, we got to adjust. And I can't sit around and be that person who is sending that first email being like, oh, this isn't a big deal. I just like doing what I'm doing, so I'm not going to change. Or I could be like a lot of the people who said, all right, now we got to pivot. We got to adjust. We got to do something different. Be willing to step out and do some of the things that, weren't what you wanted to do. Doing a virtual keynote when 50% of it is comedy is really tough. I was not excited to do those. And the first one was pretty bad. But then you start adjusting and you start realizing that if I'm just talking to a camera and I'm telling jokes to it, I just have to assume that maybe they're laughing. Mm. And figure it out. Right. And it doesn't matter if this isn't necessarily what I want to do in the moment, because I'm like a junkie for people laughing at me. I don't hear it now, but I know that it's impacting them positively. So we'll just do it differently. And I just think that was like a turning point, obviously, to recognize that you can sit here and be upset. And there were certainly days where I was really upset at, look how great everything was going. And by no fault of my doing, it's taken away from me. Certainly, I had a few moments where it was like anger. But then quickly, it was like, get over it. What are you going to do about it? And let's go. And that's fine. And so luckily, in a position where I'm still doing it here today in 2021, and live events are kind of back speaking on stages and doing the thing that I love. And luckily, we were able to kind of make it through.
Well, what I love about it is you've been able to mix the comedy and the leadership, where a lot of times people think of, when you're either team building people up, you're teaching leadership. A lot of times people get so serious on it that you lose most of the audience anyway. And I've just watched this in crowds, and I got to experience you, and it was something so different. And so it was
It was phenomenal. Tell me about what you've learned from your audience about leadership.
The thing that I feel like I've learned is I used to think that, I used to think a lot of different things about leadership in a way. I used to think one, that everybody wanted to do it. And I realize now that that's not the case. Not everybody wants to be in a position of leadership. Sometimes they're thrown into it. And sometimes they did it for other reasons than wanting to be, leading other people and helping them grow. And so I've learned that in times of working with my audience, that I have to kind of adjust and work with the different sort of mindsets, they might have towards it. But in general, I'd say what I've learned from the audience that's really helpful is that the majority of people want to be good at it because they want to help other people. And like I said, sometimes we get in our own way or we overcomplicate it and try to make it out to be this bigger thing than it needs to be. At the end of the day, leadership is about helping people. It's about caring for them. It's about caring for them in real ways. And so it's when you think of it like that, I think it kind of demystifies it a little bit and just makes it easier to understand. Like I some of the jokes I do is about all the crazy things that we try to put people through in leadership to assess their personalities and, you know, what shape are you? Are you a green star or a purple square leader? Like, what is that? That's ridiculous. Come on. So, you know, my goal is just like help people simplify it. And I think if you boil it down to like, we're just here to help people, it makes it a little bit easier to understand.
That was perfect. That wasn't a different direction, man. What about with like aspiring speakers or, you know, a person who is in a, now let me do a disclaimer here. All of you who are in the corporate world who have a job that's paying you every 2 weeks, not all of you need to do what Matt did. I just want to say that. I want to say that and I want to put that out there. The reason why I say it is because some of you might lose your marriage if you do it, like because you ain't fit for it and it ain't right for you. Talk to the aspiring speakers out there that, you know, you had the advantage of having your brother mm-hmm. in it, understanding the game.
Yep.
If you got a chance to be able to sit down with a room full of aspiring speakers, what would you tell them?
Well, I think the first thing with almost anything, right? This isn't just speaking. If you love it, if it's something that you want to do, then go do it and find as many spots you can to go do it. So when it comes to speaking, right, figure out where can you get on a stage, and if they don't pay you money, it doesn't matter. Like, just go and do it and practice and, you know, get comfortable. Go see other people doing it. Ask questions, those types of things. But the other thing, and this is a advice, like you said, I am extremely fortunate because I came into this world knowing a lot about the speaking industry because I had seen it through family members. And my middle brother, who doesn't speak, he kind of runs the back office of a lot of our work. So he knows it very well as well. My dad, I didn't talk about what my dad did. My dad in his 40s quit his job as a corporate lawyer to go do stand-up comedy. So I kind of glossed over that earlier, but, you know, also from him, kind of knew about the speaking thing. So I kind of jumped into it at a position that was probably many years ahead of somebody who is starting new. And I am well aware of like the huge advantages that created for me. But if you're one of the things my brother always told me before I got going, and this holds true, and this is the advice I always give other people who are trying to get into it. You know, we were talking a little bit earlier about like, what's the down and dirty, like what are the parts that maybe you don't like? And when it comes to speaking, you are going to write so much information down on paper and blog posts and articles, LinkedIn, you better love writing and you better get comfortable doing it because you're going to write so much. And 90% of it may never do anything. You know, it might be a blog post that you put out that nobody reads. It might be a social media post that 4 people look at. But get comfortable writing because that is going to be what is your eventually your keynote. It's going to be the one piece that somebody does see that gets you invited to go, you know, speak at their organization or something like that. And actually, Kelly, I got to credit you. I think I shared this with you, but if I did not, it's one of the things I took from you from that first time that we met. You talk a lot about how you, your parents, I believe, really instilled that writing in you, and you try to do it every day. So, I wish I had it right here with me. I don't, it's in my bag. But after that day where you were talking about kind of your writing practice, that night in the hotel, I started it for me. I had never really gotten in the habit of journaling and just writing down, where's my head at today? And so I've been doing that since we met. From that, I've taken so much information that I've then used to develop different, blog posts and things that I put on my website, or some of it has been content I've used for my podcast as well. And so thank you for that sort of like good reminder to just get in the practice of, if it's 5 minutes, if it's 10 minutes, if it's an hour, whatever you got every day, get comfortable writing. And so that would be the advice I would give, you know, an aspiring speaker is, what are you passionate about? What do you think you can offer other people to help them in this? And start writing.
Wow. Well, it's funny that you say it, right? I didn't know that you were going to say that. I don't know if you'll be able to see it. Let me put it up close. Let me put it up close on here. Let's do it like that. Can you read the numbers on the top of the page?
I cannot, but that's because my TV's far away.
Can you read them now?
Let me pull it closer to me. Don't use you can't, use I can.
No, the numbers.
Oh, very no, I can't quite see them.
Can't see them?
Oh, does that say 421? 420,
423, 86. This is my notes from 1986.
Wow.
So this was this was April 23rd, 1986. I was born in 1975. Wow. So this was right before my 11th birthday. And I'll read it to you. Don't use can, or don't use you can't, use I can. You need to be a person with the nicest personality. It is nice to be important, but it's better to be nice. Go out and do it. You need to get the attention, then turn around and do it. You need to be a good seller. Close them and keep them closed. 1986.
Dude, that's a pretty insightful 11-year-old.
Well, it wasn't insightful. I actually had to take 10 pages of notes when I was growing up. This is what my dad did. Shout out to Pop. But he made us do this every day, and I would do it, and I would skip lines, as you could kind of see. I wrote big and things like that. But that writing, what you were talking about, I think is so amazing, man. And, when I'm telling you, I can't compliment you enough. I mean, I get a chance to be around some of the greatest speakers in the world. And being around you, the fact that you just are yourself. Like, for those of you out there listening, and you're listening to Matt's interview, this is what you get, like, when you have Matt come and speak. It's not I love it because it's not a pitch. And that's the reason why I wanted to have you on the show, because it wasn't a pitch. It wasn't the, you know, hey, by the way, you know, you got this and that. And it was just Matt. And I want to compliment you on that, man, because that's not common in this world. It's not common in the world, but it's definitely not common in the speaking world. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, I appreciate you saying that. And,
how intentional is that though, man? Like, did you set out to do that? Was that something that was coached in, or did you just be like, you know, this is me and I'm going?
I think it's something I've picked up. It was a change. Like I said, having kids in the corporate career changed me to realize that, like, I can't be somebody different at work than I'm going to be in real life.
Yeah.
And it's not like, I don't think I was like overboard with it or too crazy about it. But, you know, I love how people talk about like work-life balance. And I always say it doesn't exist, because if you're being somebody different at work than you are being in your personal life, like, you know, or if you're going to be one thing here and a different person there, like, what's up with that? And so earlier in my career, I was probably like that. Like, I used to wear a suit because, like, I wanted to look important and maybe make it seem like I was more insightful or had something more to give, whatever it was. But when I had kids and then when I maybe stopped worrying about some of those things and I'd started showing up to work wearing my Notorious Big t-shirt and, you know, just was who I was. And I was okay talking to my employees and leaders about my personal life and, hey, yeah, don't call me on Saturday at 11. I got a softball game and we're going to, you know, be doing that, but I'll call you afterwards or whatever it is. Right. Like being real with people. I felt like it changed who I was as a leader. And so then when it comes into speaking, I feel like I just want to be that same sort of person. Like I don't want to show up and, I don't want people to have to like cater to me. I don't want to show up and try to act like I'm more important than I am. I get paid money to speak. It is one of the most ridiculous jobs in the world. And I'm like grateful for that. I think I have something that can help people. Certainly. Yes. But let's be real. It's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous profession. And, I am just happy to be me in all of those moments and be that person. And I don't want to, I don't want to show up and try to act like some guru, who deserves to be, you know, pampered and talked around and walked around. Like I'm just going to be me. And I think you're absolutely like that too. Like that's one of the things I picked up from you. When we met was like you said, you're who you are on stage. And as soon as you walk off, you're that exact same person too. And I gravitate towards that style, just because I think it's a better way to live.
So Matt, finish the sentence for me. If companies would just do X, things would be a lot simpler.
If companies would just focus on their people, I get torn a little bit because there are some amazing companies that are doing things right and doing well with their employees. And they'll tell you that they're focusing on the customer. And that also makes sense, certainly. But if we focus on our people and we intentionally build a culture at the places we work or where our influence is, and we focus there, then guess what? Those people are going to create the best products for our customers. Those people are going to create the best customer service interactions that we're looking for. And they're going to want to be there and they're going to want to show up every day. In fact, right before we joined this, like this whole, and now I lost the word for it. What's the resignation thing that,
I know what you're talking about. The great resignation,
the great resignation. Yep. Yes. Sorry. Total lapse there. Like I literally just posted this on LinkedIn because it's hilarious to me how much conversation is happening right now about the great resignation. Like, what'd you all expect? Like we have been treating employees like robots, like a seat in a chair for 15 or 20 years or longer than that. Like, of course, eventually people are going to be like, hey, maybe I could do something different, or maybe I want to go work for a place that's going to value me a little bit more. And so that's what we're seeing. Like, yes, there are some other factors that are playing into this, but it does not surprise me that, you know, that this is happening, because too often I think companies are focused on other things or growth or the five-year plan that the ones that are sustaining and continue to do well and will do well are the ones that really focus on their people and do it intentionally and meaningfully. And I was lucky that the corporate career I had, I felt like they did that. I left and went and did something different, but they really did focus on their people, and it's why it's a Fortune 50 company and why they continue to do well, I think. So I think everybody, if we just focus on our people, the world's going to be a better place for it, and the companies will grow and prosper the way that they want.
What is the one thing that you haven't got a chance to say from stage in your speaking career that you wish you would, but maybe it would have a challenging impact on you?
You know, great question. I don't know that there's anything that, like, I've held back. Okay. And part of the thing is, which I don't think I did this at the event that you saw, but one of the talks I do is around these generational differences, and it's the millennials and baby boomers and how we work together. And I love doing sort of that talk because I get to say very directly to every group, every age group, like, here's where you're being ridiculous. And it's fun. It's just really fun to do that. But that's what, so that's one of the things that I think it's important for the older generation to understand and recognize, because we're still trying to figure out this millennial generation, or now Gen Z, which I don't think really exists, but whatever. I think they're just younger millennials. We don't need a fifth group. But the, like, we wonder why people act a certain way. And you know, the baby boomer generation said, oh, you know, these young groups have no work ethic. So what I love to do is get up on stage and explain to them, the baby boomers are they were responsible for the very creation of Generation X, Generation Y, but every day they act like they have nothing to do with it. Like, are you kidding me? You guys were the ones that bought the participation ribbons. The kids didn't buy it themselves. Okay. So, like, I already get to go on stage and say those types of things and, like, poke fun at the silly things we do. So I feel like I haven't left too much unsaid. Hopefully I've said it in a respectful way that, you know, I've yet to have anybody take offense to anything I've said on stage that I'm aware of.
What, Matt, what's the Star Wars for you in your now career, which I believe is your purpose? And again, if you're inside a company right now and you guys go to conferences, you need to let your people know that Matt needs to be there. If you own a company, you need to have Matt in to speak. This is not a commercial for him. I'm just telling you from my heart, and I don't do that. You know, I don't have him on the podcast for that. You guys know that they're out there listening. The podcast is not about a promotional kind of scenario. But Matt, what is your Star Wars? Like, in this purpose that you're in now, what's your Star Wars? What's that thing that's like, oh, this is what I want to do. Like, this next, like, you know, that out of reach kind of thing right now, but it's going to become your reality later. What's the Star Wars?
Well, I mean, aside from, like, becoming the next, like, Gary V, who I admire for his speaking prowess, and you know, I too would like to own the Jets someday. you know, The biggest thing for me that, like, when I think is in the speaking world, right? Like, I love the more people I get to speak to, the more I get to engage.
What's the number? Well, how many do you want to speak in front of at one time?
Oh, like, I want to do like Cowboys Stadium. You know, I want to be like Kevin Hart, in front of 80,000.
Yes.
But no, like, you know, for me, it's always, yes, there is, like, it's more fun, the bigger stages, the bigger audiences, because again, with somebody who, my goal is to at least make you laugh for part of it. The infectious laughter that you get from larger crowds, you know, I've been in rooms of 15 people, and if two people laugh, you know, it's awesome. But it's not really loud. Right. So if you're speaking in front of 10,000 people and you get even just 100 people to laugh, it sounds a lot louder. So for me, because I'm still, I feel early in this speaking game, you know, there's a lot of people I look up to that do it really well, do it from big stages, do it from organizations. And really one of the things that I hope will happen and will be, I guess, part of my plan is not only, like, what I really enjoy is I enjoy the speaking and I love it, but I also really love when we get to, like, get down one-on-one and work together on problems and issues. And so as my career has evolved, like, more and more of that's happening, and I'm excited for, like, that and where it will go. Because that's when, you know, I always joke, like, when I speak on stage, especially if I'm doing, like, the generational thing, right, it's really funny and it makes people laugh, and they come up afterwards. It's like, oh, that's great. But then they all leave. And they go on to the next thing, or they go on to the next event or session or whatever it be. And then it's quiet again. And it's like, I want to build those relationships with people where we get to, like, I get to see what you do with the information that we talk about. And that's where I kind of, at that point, I feel like we're developing better leaders. We're developing people, and I get to see it. I get to see it happen and transform. So that's what gives me a little bit of excitement kind of moving forward, and where I hope it goes.
So Matt, for me, the whole reason why I started the podcast is because my kids, right? It's Maddox and McKenna. Maddox is 10 years old and he's a superhero. He lives, marches to the beat of his own drum. If anyone out there has heard or seen Maddox, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If you haven't, I mean, he's the most lively kid that, I mean, he's excited about every single thing in the world. My daughter has the biggest heart. She's an artist and she is just so wise beyond her years. She's 12 years old. But I made the podcast because I want to take iconic people like yourself and I wanted to show my kids that anything in life is possible as long as you have the right attitude like you and the, a crazy work ethic like you. What advice would you have for Maddox and McKenna? And if you could use their names, it would be awesome.
I think for Maddox and McKenna, it's whatever your dreams are, just do it. Nike, like just do it. And there are so many people who are in their 20s, 30s, and 40s right now who are wishing that they would have just done it or tried it or took a step in that direction. And so, you know, I don't want to get to the end of my life whenever that happens and have regrets because I didn't try something. I'm okay having regrets because maybe it didn't work out or it didn't come to full fruition. But if I didn't even try, then that's on me. Again, like angry at myself, thinking inside of how I can be better. Like you got to try. So Maddox, McKenna, just do it. And I'm going to take a sidebar from that for a second, because this was like a funny moment I had recently with my daughter. Had that stereotypical question, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And my daughter Emerson said to me, she said, I want to be a YouTuber. And it was this moment in my head where the first thing I thought was, what? You can't be a YouTuber. And then I was like, hold on, wait a second. I guess you could. That wasn't an option I had when I was a kid. I didn't have the option to be a YouTuber when I was a kid. And so then we spent the next 40. The funny thing is, like, my kids don't even have an iPad. So like, I don't even know how she knew about YouTube, but she did. And she wants to be a YouTuber. And so then we spent an hour talking about, like, well, what would you do? What type of stuff would you like to share? And she starts laying out these plans for what she wants to do. And it was like, okay, like, I guess we're going to have to start thinking about that. We're going to have to start doing it. And sweetie, if you want to do that, we'll help you. But you got to do it. And so we have not made any progress on that, because I think it was like a flash in the pan moment thought that she had. But it was just like that. If you want to, like, you can do it. Just do it. Take some steps. Take action now. And if you do that and it doesn't work out, then be happy and okay with those results. But don't be because you were scared to try or you were worried about what somebody was going to think. Just go.
Matt, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on a podcast, and it's been great to be able to, like, for me, I was just telling a woman, she asked me what the podcast was about, and I said, it's attitude determines altitude, and I never want to talk about what people do. I want to talk about who they are, right? And today I got a chance to be able to peel back some of the layers of Matt, and what's amazing, man, is the message is, it's so consistent, it's ridiculous. Like, for the people out there that haven't got to see him speak, when you get to see him speak, come back to this episode, because you'll see that what he's talking about is just what he lives. And I want to thank you for that, man. I want to honor you for it. And I mean, you have just been absolutely phenomenal.
Kelly, I appreciate the opportunity. I certainly did not think we were going to talk about sandwiches and some of the things that we got into today. And I'm really excited we did. So thanks for having me, man.
Can you do me a favor? Can you yell out? Because I know your wife's in the house. I want you to yell out, Megan, make me a sandwich.
Megan, I need a sandwich. You can't hear it. She just yelled, huh?
Yeah, exactly. She's going to beat you when we're done. Yeah. But now's the time, guys, where if you're out there listening, do all the things that you know you need to do. Click the links. So check out all the sponsors. Do all the things that you need. You know you should be doing anyway. We love you. Thank you for listening. And what I want you to do, too, is the ask that I have is if you got any value from this, which I know every single one of you did, then share it with every single person that needs to hear Matt's message, because I think that the world needs to have more Matts in the world, but better yet, they need to have more Megans in the world. So, Matt, you have been an absolute pleasure, man. I want to thank you for being on the show, and you're officially off the hot seat.
Thanks again, Kelly.
Hold on, Matt. It's okay. Good, good, good.
I had to go tell Megan that was a joke.
Yeah, I'm sure you did, man.
You're like, huh?
I'm sure you did. Hey, can she come on the screen real quick? Can I meet her?
She's on the phone right now. Let me see if.